listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 251 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we're going to be discussing 7 tips for pitching your music. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
Great. Sitting right in front of you, like we were in New Orleans recently, but now we're in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, we're at the CD Baby HQ. It's good to see you.
Yeah, I had a busy week, been in the office all day, every day this week, and then at night been recording. So I'll have a new album. Well, I shouldn't say I'll have a new album almost out, but it's ready to go into the mixing phase. So, you know, 10 years from now.
10 years from now, you'll get that out there.
Right.
It was kind of a sad moment for me yesterday. We had used Playlist Push for our latest song, and they actually did an excellent job and got us on this massive playlist that finally removed the song yesterday.
Oh, it's such a sad day. It's like, it's kind of like getting fired. You're like, wait, where's my paycheck going to come from now? I got kicked off this playlist.
I don't know. Good question, but yes.
Laid off, not fired. You got laid off.
We got laid off.
We no longer have a use for your song.
But yeah. Anyway, yes, we used Playlist Push. I actually really liked the tool. They did a great job. Got us on some other playlists that were smaller, but it was that one big playlist that over the course of 2 months, we got about I think it was about 75,000 streams off for the song on that one playlist. So,
and did it get that song into your, you know, top tracks?
It is now our top streamed track.
Ah, all right.
So
go Playlist Push.
Yeah. So it was interesting to, you know, try them out It also, the interesting thing about Playlist Push is all the curators are required to give feedback about your song. And, it, you know, whenever you get feedback from various people who are just hearing your song cold, some of it's like, this is amazing. Other people saying, like, negative things that you're like, I'm going to find this person and tell them what's what.
Or the one where you never quite know how to read it, where it's like, great song, doesn't really fit my list. It's like, are you just lying to make me feel, what is that answer?
Yeah. Yeah. So that, it was a good experience. You know, when after you get over that moment of frustration, you have to remind yourself that it's their opinions, and their opinions are true to them, and it's interesting to see how the same song strikes different people. So yeah. When you get over the bit of, you know, feeling of rejection, you can actually learn, I think, some interesting insights into how people perceive your music, and it's different than what you might think.
Yeah. Well, we might have some news items to cover. I'm not sure, but it's interesting because that is tying in with our discussion later, because Playlist Push is essentially a kind of mass pitching engine.
Yes.
So the experience you're talking about of getting feedback, rejection, or acceptance is very integral to our later discussion.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yes, because we are going to be talking about pitching your music. Before we get to that, we should remind everyone that the DIY Musician Conference tickets are on sale. And by the time you're hearing this, the early bird tickets, both for Valencia and for Austin, have come and gone. But the tickets will still be cheaper now than they will a few months from now. So stop waiting around.
No matter when you're listening to this, now is the time to
yes,
act, because they're never going to get cheaper.
Yes, that's how the world works. Things don't get cheaper. Typically, some things do. But so DIYMusicianCon.com, Valencia, if you're in Europe or just want to go to Valencia, that's May 30th through 31st. And the big show is in Austin, August 28th through 30th, and it's going to be a good time. So get your tickets, DIYMusicianCon.com.
The big show in the big state of Texas.
That's right. Everything's bigger in Texas. Yep. So be there at one of those. It will be an amazing event. You'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
I promise.
Highlight of my year.
Yes.
Every year.
Yes, it is. All right, so we're going to be discussing 7 tips for pitching your music, and I should say that we also have a lot of great listener feedback or questions later on in the show, so you'll want to stick around for those. Some of them tie into some of the current events happening out there with some of the platforms. But today we're talking about 7 tips for pitching your music. And I know, Chris, you wrote an article about this. You wanna lead us in, like, what am I pitching my music for?
Yeah, so I mean, a pitch is just you basically having to sell yourself to someone, usually using words.
That's always good.
Sometimes it's in person. Sometimes you are writing an email. Or, you know, there's different ways to get a hold of someone. But yeah, you've got a short amount of time to pitch yourself, to sell yourself, and that could be to get a gig, to attract a booking agent or a publicist. It could be to get some press coverage or, you know, an interview, a podcast interview, print coverage in a newspaper. What else?
Playlists.
Yeah. Yes. Playlist placements. You know, there's a lot of things that you got to get someone's attention for. So the pitch is sort of how you're structuring that, what you're saying, yeah, all that. And I think we decided to do this because you and I receive a lot of really terrible email pitches.
Well, it also relates to, I was relating it to job interviews because we've been hiring here. I'm looking for a couple additions to my team here at CD Baby, and just looking at how awful most people are about going about getting a job. And I was thinking, this is just like what musicians do when trying to get playlist placement or editorial placement. Because, you know, there's all sorts of opportunities for your music out there. And if you don't know how to pitch properly, half the time you're the one causing you to get no traction because you're doing it wrong. So we're going to talk through some of those things.
Right, right. Well, should we just jump in?
Yes.
All right. So number one is you've got to be ready to do your homework. Do your homework up front. Don't go fishing around and write emails that are like, hey, I'm not sure if you're the person that this should go to, but I'm awesome. You know, find out the right person you should be speaking with, find the right contact information for them. And then also, you know, this isn't always easy to tell, but these people have preferred ways of being contacted. You know, some venue, talent buyers still want to get on the phone with you. So if it's telephone, call them. If it's email, make sure you're formatting the email properly. If it's a web form that's on their website, use that, you know, just, don't make it a pain in the ass for them by being where they don't want you to be.
Yeah, and a part of doing your homework is nothing will kill an opportunity quicker than, you know, like what you're saying, reaching out to the wrong person or spending a lot of time and effort reaching out to somebody who is never going to pick you or select you in the first place because it's the wrong pitch. And by that, I mean, you know, this podcast. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows this is not where we promote artists. We do sometimes have artists on the show, but it's always when they've done something interesting or unique or have something cool going on that they can share with the community. Like, here's how I did this campaign, mm-hmm. and we had this problem to solve, and we tried this. This isn't where we play music. And I get a surprising number of pitches from publicists going, hey, so-and-so dropped a new album. We'd love for you to feature it on your podcast. I'm like, Wrong show. You obviously did not do any homework because you would know you're just wasting your time. And then I feel sorry for the artist because when they've hired a publicist to do, you know, pitches that are untargeted, they're wasting money on somebody doing work that's never going to result in anything. So doing your homework, whether it's, you know, trying to get a interview, editorial placement, playlist, a gig means you understand what you're emailing about and who that person is and what right. function that they like. If they can't ever help you in the long run, why waste their time?
Yeah, I mean, you're actually kind of talking about the second point I had, which was to show that you understand who they are and what they do. Like, I get emails from people concerning the podcast being like, hey, I manage this band and they're really awesome. They'd be great to be on your podcast. Okay, why? Like, we don't do that. If they have used a specific tool in a really unique way to do something really cool and get attention for themselves, like, that's what we want in the first sentence of this pitch, like, which, again, shows that you've listened to our podcast and you know the kind of content we want to cover. It's not like, oh, you have a cool band. Well, so does everyone else. We don't care about that. It's like, so again, you got to show that you understand and appreciate what this opportunity is.
Yeah, like to translate it to something concerning getting gigs, if you're just carpet bombing your whole town or the whole region, any venue possible, and you're a metal band, and somebody who gets your email and they do open mic nights with singer-songwriters, or they just have singer-songwriters or folk music in their club, and you're a metal band, you're just wasting their time. They're never going to pick you. You're just frustrating people, and then you're putting a lot of energy in the wrong places. And then a lot of artists get frustrated. Why aren't I getting a response? Well, you've not done your homework, and two, you've not shown that you understand what they do.
Yeah, and I think there's a common bit of advice about sort of within the first sentence or two of a pitch, like saying something about appreciating the work this person has done. And I think that can be overused and it can feel cloying if it's done wrong. But like, you know, if someone wrote and said, hey, I loved your podcast episode, you know, I listened to your guys' podcast and I loved episode 168 about whatever, you know, or, hey, I really love Mississippi Studios, this venue that you guys, I saw this show, blah, blah, blah. It was such, you know, there's a way you can acknowledge that. Don't go overboard. You don't have to feel like you're kissing ass or whatever. But if it's genuine, and hopefully it is if you are pitching for this opportunity because it's something you appreciate, then, yeah, put that up front. Definitely don't copy and paste your bio. This isn't a place for, like, boilerplate press release stuff. That's another thing I get all the time. I'm like, wait, you're, quote, pitching me, but there's literally nothing in this that's customized to me. It's just a cut and paste job. Yeah. So don't do that. The third point here, which I think is one of the most important things about a pitch, is that you have to acknowledge that the person you're pitching has a problem. I mean, don't say it like that. You have a problem, but they want to fill their venue. They want to sell more booze. They want to diversify their playlist. They want to cover the next up and coming cool thing in their newspaper. You know, there's something they need. And basically, you have to think of your pitch as a way to, like, make a bridge between their problem or need and your unique solution.
Yeah, if you're a venue, especially, you know, their problem is they've got to fill a schedule that never ends
right,
with constant flow of new bands. I mean, they get repeat bands, but it's like, that's a lot of music you got to book. Mm-hmm. And they don't have time to waste for artists who don't have it together, just, you know, so doing your homework, like when it, as it relates to venues, and this is something that when I had a band playing locally here in Portland, we had some success with, I would go to the venue site, I would look at their calendar, I would start with dates that looked like there was holes in the calendar, or bands that we would be a good opener for, that it appeared that there was still no opener slotted for that that time, and I would email the venue and say, it looks like you need an opener here or have this date available, we'd be a good fit and could solve that problem for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're like, okay, they've done homework, they understand what function I serve, and they're helping me solve a problem. Now they're engaging in a conversation because I'm helping them get their job done.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about it, like, you're helping this person do less work.
Yes.
That's what you want to do. And all of these people, whether they're journalists or bookers or people who are curating playlists, like, all of their problems never end. This is just an ongoing schedule of needs and solutions. So,
yeah, and going back to number two as it relates to playlists, the number two being show you understand who they are and what they do. The one thing that I found with playlists that's worked really well is saying, I was checking out your playlists and feel like our music would be a good fit. And I was only emailing that to people where I'd actually done that and did feel like our music would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
I was not just randomly emailing people that had hip-hop playlists saying that Small Town Poets would be a great fit, because mm-hmm. that's just a lie.
Yeah.
So that's part of doing the homework of, like, you're going to have ultimately better chance for success and not waste your own time if you actually target the right people.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I didn't have it on our sort of bullet points to talk about, but not every opportunity is for every artist. You got to be honest with yourself about, you know, do I really want to go after that? Because maybe that's not my thing. It might not be my audience. It might look shiny and bright and like you can reach mass audiences through this thing, but don't delude yourself and reach out for the wrong opportunities.
Yeah.
When you are thinking of your unique solution to their problem and trying to communicate to them, be very specific, but also be very realistic. I don't think they're expecting miracles. Like, you don't have to promise that you're going to bring 1,000 people to the 200-capacity rock club. Like, maybe on a Tuesday night, you can bring 10 or 15 extra people than they're used to. And that might be enough for them. That might be sort of just the solution they're looking for. So don't overpromise and under-deliver. I had a time, I think it was about 5 years ago, where a friend of mine, Mike, was touring through the East Coast, and he has a bit of a name in the indie rock world. So I was like, oh, we'll play a show together. I could probably book us at this cool place. And I did, you know, I got us a guarantee that I felt like was really nice, trying to set Mike up good for the tour. And then I forget what night it was, but it was like probably like a Wednesday. And there were people there, but it felt like no one was there. The show was fine, but I felt terrible about having negotiated a guarantee under the sort of pretense of this somewhat famous indie rock guy's coming through town and we're going to have a great night. And then the night was not great from a butts in seats bar sales standpoint. And at the end of the night, they paid. And I could tell it was like, handing over the money reluctantly. And I just felt awful. I'm like, I think I burned this bridge forever. So again, like, be realistic. I guess in that case, it's one of those things like the winds and the rock gods were not on our side that night, because I did try, but it was like there were other things going on. It was a rainy or snowy night. Just
actually, you bring up an interesting point that one of the main things we forgot from the people you might be pitching to is other artists to be on their bill.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And like being honest and realistic about the amount of people that can come would come to the show. And this reminds me of the last couple times we've done a show in the Atlanta area. This person we were working with at the time that helped us get the show is like, oh, I'm also working with this other artist. And every time they've played here, they've had X amount of people. So we could probably count on them getting at least, you know, 20, 30 tickets. I'm like, okay, zero.
Whoa.
And it's just because they were promising, and then the artist had no motivation to promote the show. And so it was, they were looking at more of an opportunity for themselves and didn't really look at it as like, hey, this is an opportunity that I still need to prove out that it's worth having me on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, if you are sometimes pitching to another artist, hey, give me the opening slot or let's do the show together, I could probably bring this amount of people, you need to follow through. And so it's like that person approached us again about opening when we came back, had another Atlanta show. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
They did nothing.
Right.
and so it's like they were pitched to us before as if they would bring this amount of people, and they didn't. So other artists might be who you're pitching to.
Well, I think there's this weird thing. It's almost like magical thinking, like in what's Field of Dreams, like if you build it, he will come, or whatever that line is, where like you think you have to impress the person you're pitching to. So maybe you stretch the truth a little bit, and realistically you're traveling through a town you know don't live in, so you could probably get 15 or 20 people to the venue, but instead you're like, I probably need to say I can get 50 people there in order to get the gig. And now you get the gig, and that's suddenly going to fill in all the, you know, the magic after that. But no, it doesn't work that way. So we'd probably be surprised by the fact that, you know, these folks, again, they don't expect miracles, and they definitely would appreciate the honesty, but also not hold it against you. If 15 is the number that you expect, then, like, they'll either say no, like, call us again when you can, you know, when you're a little bigger, or, cool, we like your music, like, you were honest with us, let's build this together, like, let's schedule you for every 3 or 6 months, and hopefully in a year, there'll be 100 people in the room.
Yeah, and also for them, like you said a little bit earlier, that if it's, depending on the night, if it's a Tuesday night and sometimes they don't even have music that night, you bringing 15 extra people is better than nothing.
Right.
Better than just the, you know, the music over the sound system playing. And so being honest with them, it might be like, okay, well, this is what we can do. Let's start on this night and let's work towards, you know, building it towards the weekend. And yeah, so you don't want to overpromise. And, you know, you said, you know, the problem, like you had on listed here, that butts and seats, you know, could be a problem that they need to solve. Boo sales, growing their following if it's a playlist. So knowing that a playlister might want more fans, more exposure to their playlist. And so for you to say, hey, I love your playlist. If you put in our track, I will include it in an email to all our fans and tell them to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a big part of this is make sure you work for it. Like, once the gig is booked or once the, you know, the podcast interview is scheduled, like, it's not just simply about showing up and playing the gig or doing the interview or whatever. There's got to be a way where you're approaching this like really like a team effort with this person so that you can promote it in advance, of course, but then in the case of like an interview or a playlist placement, promote it after the fact. Really have a plan for how you're going to marshal your resources, and that mm-hmm. could be what you just said, like, I will do this with my fan base. I'll direct them to your blog or to your playlist. I'm willing to put my own money into promoting this show. You know, there's any number of resources you have. It could be your own talents, skills, money, mm-hmm. your audience, but have a plan for how you're going to put that to work and make sure you are clear about that. You know, if you think about Spotify's Release Radar direct editorial, you know, pitching mm-hmm. tool through Spotify for artists, the last little paragraph in that form is like, what's your plan? Like, they want to know you have, you know, whatever it is, a video that's in the works or an ad budget you're going to spend to direct people to Spotify or who knows what it is, any number of things, but they want to know what your plan is. So it's not just them doing you this favor of putting a song on a playlist. It's like, are you serious about this?
My plan's for them to make me famous.
that's all of our plans. Yeah.
That leads into number four, and we sort of started talking about already, which was your unique solution in being specific. You mm-hmm. know, like if you're gonna, like talking about a playlist, or we're gonna feature your playlist and email to all our fans, or you know, being very succinct with a club booker saying, "Hey, last time we played on our own, we got 30 people, but here's our plan. We have a plan to do this and this and this." And I think people can respect that and know that sometimes you can execute a plan perfectly and it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does. But they knowing that you're doing the work will open up doors for you. I should say that when you're pitching people, especially for shows, the fact that you got all your family members to come out to your first show and had 100 people there and everyone that's ever known you in your life came out to support you, those are not your fans. Do not count that as your total, because that, in the case of those that I mentioned in Atlanta with us, I'm pretty sure that was the case. Like, oh, last couple times, you know, we had 100 people. And I'm like,
they burned through all their office mates, friends,
yes,
and family.
We should do this to show support. That's not a fan. That's, you know, someone who cares about you and your, you know, your personal journey and as a part of your life. But those are not people that you can count as fans that will come out to a show when you play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned number four and said it, and I think we've actually covered a lot of the what followed number four too. We've sort of been bouncing around, but while you're pitching and while you're treating these. You know, let's say you get the opportunity that you're pitching for. You build a database of these people. Keep good notes. Return to them. Don't just book the gig, but once it's, you know, once it goes well or doesn't, talk about how you can maybe do it better next time. Book another gig before you leave the club. If it's a playlist placement, make sure you have another song in mind to pitch them once you're in your situation where the song cycles off the playlist. Like, maybe you've got another one ready to send those folks, and clearly they've enjoyed what you've done. So it's sort of like, make sure you're treating it like an ongoing relationship and not just this one-off thing that you do for me and bye-bye afterwards.
Yeah. Well, you just said maybe book another gig that night. Mm-hmm. There's been times where we've played shows and the booker's there, that was great, guys. I'd love to have you back in like 3 months. And like, let's get on the calendar right now.
Right now.
I'd love to have you back in 6 months. Let's do it right now.
Yeah.
Let's just settle that. While you're amped about us, while we have your attention, let's just settle that. Or it's worth asking when you're settling up in the evening, like if it is the booker that's there. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes the bar guy's left to settle up.
Uh-huh.
But say, hey, we thought this went well. Can we go ahead and get another date on the books and maybe try for a Wednesday or a Thursday if it went well? If not, maybe we should go to Monday night.
right. Seriously, though, I think that's like we have to be willing, again, to be honest and like be demoted if that's what it takes. Like if it's you're going to burn the bridge entirely and never play there again or be like, you know what, this didn't go so well on a Friday. What if we try a Monday or Tuesday? Like I think that can go a long way with these people that are like, again, have the need and you're willing to do what it takes to try to meet that need. So.
Yeah, because they, again, going back to that problem, they have a problem, they have to fill a calendar, and you always have this need to meet new artists and expand your roster of artists that you can draw from because, you know, bands come and go and, you know, a lot of these venues are trying to do a mix of national touring acts with local stuff mixed in. Very few clubs sustain off of just national tours. And so if it was something where it's like, hey, that didn't go as well, but can we try a Tuesday night? They still have that problem to fill Tuesday night. They know you. They've heard your music.
Yeah.
If you've acted professional and made an effort. And that kind of goes into number five. We have honesty and effort here listed. That not overpromising, but if you know they've got that relationship with you, they've seen you in action. Maybe they still like your music, but that didn't work out. Saying, "Hey, Thursday night, it's going to be tough for us to get what you want on Thursday night. We tried. Let's do Tuesday and build this back up." That's a way to go.
And even if even if the results of the first collaboration is less than optimal, but you've proven yourself in a number of other regards. Like you said, you're professional. They liked your music enough to give you the first chance. Them giving you another opportunity is easier than them opening their inbox and finding a new stranger and checking out their music and then having to have the back and forth exchange. So even there, you're saving them a lot of work. So,
yeah, especially like, you know, clubs, if they're open on a Monday, Monday and Tuesday are days where they're not expecting a lot. And so just being in rotation, getting to know them, it's a perfect opportunity to over-deliver when they're not expecting much.
True.
You know, when you start looking further to the weekend, the expectation level goes up and up and up because on a Friday night when people are out or a Saturday night, they expect that the venue has a good crowd and you don't want to be the one that turns their Friday night where they normally make a couple grand in alcohol sales into the night they make $50.
Right. I mean, not to turn this into an exclusively booking conversation, but that you did bring up a good point of like over delivering on smaller opportunities. Book yourself in smaller clubs and then just pack it out. Like suddenly every show is, you know, feels like it has more energy. I don't know if there's a playlist or press coverage equivalent, but yeah, don't always be gunning for like the biggest stage and the brightest, shiniest opportunity.
Yeah. Let's move on to number six. You have collaborate.
Yeah, I think we already sort of said this, but again, don't think of this as something that they're doing for you and that you've got your hand raised and they're going to pick you and then make you famous. It's like it's going to be a team effort, and you should figure out what, if it's a venue, what is their promotion process look like? Are they taking out ads in the local weeklies? Do they have, you know, a digital marketing practice or budget? What do they expect of you? Do they expect you to be postering the town? Do they expect you to be whatever? Find out what the expectations are, basically, not just for booking, but even a playlist placement is kind of a collaborative opportunity, and there's expectations that you will be driving your audience to their playlist, blah, blah, blah. So again, think of it like a team effort.
Well, when you mentioned that, one thing that came to mind is I think you should have a reasonable expectation in your head of what they should
what
be
they should do, right?
Yeah, because if you typically see, you know, the club in like the local weeklies, there's typically where all the venues have all their ads and things like that and are promoting certain shows. And, you know, there's a venue here in town that I have in my mind where, you know, they tend to make posters for a lot of the shows. And if you see that, they do that as a pattern, and then they don't do that for your show. include you in that process.
Yeah, what the heck?
Then maybe there's like, hey, well, we did our part, you didn't do your part. So maybe the turnout wasn't as good. It wasn't just us.
Right. Yeah,
it's
totally
a collaboration.
Yeah. And I mean, that's probably not something you're going to work out in the pitch.
No,
but
no.
Like, it's sort of the second email or the follow-up conversation is like, okay, now we're interested in each other. What are we each going to do for this thing?
I think when it comes to press, the idea of collaboration, it's like you could say, here's what I've got going on, and, you know, be succinct and have an idea of like, I've seen that you typically write stories about artists in this way, but are there any other storylines you're interested in that I might be able to, you know, draw from? Or just trying to open it up that like, yeah, when I cover artists, I typically am looking for this, but I'm also interested in these things. And you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm working with some information that it feels like more of a collaboration than just, here's my story, love it or leave it, you know?
Right. And I think going back to being specific, it is okay to put in the initial pitch, I have 6,000 email subscribers, or I have, you know, 100,000 Twitter followers, and I'm happy to use that to direct them all to your thing. Or, you know, like, it's okay to be specific about again, the resources you are going to be willing to marshal on behalf of the effort.
And also with the idea of collaboration with a pitch, even for press or for shows, this wouldn't necessarily work for playlist, but it doesn't have to be you as the artist by yourself. It could be a collective of artists that you're pitching. And a lot of times with gigs, that's a really great way to go in with them like, hey, these artists, we're collaborating on putting together this bill, whether it's a theme that you've got going or it's just a bunch of artists that know each other and fan base is, you know, similar, and going in and saying, hey, we're collaborating on this show. That's going to be more interesting to people a lot of times.
Yeah, and then you've done a whole bunch of the person's job because they don't have to put a bill together. It's just, here's the package. So that's,
yeah,
a good one.
And so that's an opportunity as well. Also with press, there's might be an angle that's more about what's going on in the music community, where you and maybe some other artists that you know could be a centerpiece to the story, but it's not just a, hey, I've got a new song out, you
know? Well, this is a funny point to get to after we're talking about pitching for an hour, but be succinct.
It hasn't been an hour, Chris.
There's nothing more exhausting to me when I open an email from a stranger and it's, you know, 10 paragraphs long. They don't get to the point. Like, it's so exhausting. I generally, like, to be honest, I often just stop reading after the first paragraph if it doesn't hook me, and I just delete it because I don't have time in my life for this. Like, get to the point, prove I need you, and then get out of there. Like, and if it's a paragraph or maybe two paragraphs, perfect.
Yeah, this is one of those things where if you have a job that requires you to spend a lot of time, you know, reading email, nothing is more exhausting than opening it up, an email, and it looking like a book. If it looks like a book, before you hit that send button, you're doing it wrong. It should not look like someone needs to set aside time, go get a cup of coffee, and find a comfy place to sit in order to read your email.
No, it's funny, though, because I do this when I'm writing, when I'm, like, pitching someone, or if I'm thinking of strangers. I keep my message short, but I'm laughing because when I send internal CD Baby emails about something I'm really care about or I've thought through, they are novels, but I expect everyone else on the team to have to read them because, you know, we're all stuck together.
That's a little different, though, because we have a working relationship. Right. But when we're talking about pitching, oftentimes it's a cold conversation and it's something where, you know, they're not expecting your email. The other tip I would give in the whole succinct thing when it comes to email is, feel free to hit that return button and give it some line breaks, because then it has some visual definition. I do this all the time. It's, you know, if I was writing for an English paper, it would be, they would say, why are you doing that? But that's not what we're doing here.
Right.
So it's like, here's a thought that I want to stand out, and then I'll hit return, give it a space, and here's the next thing, you know, and then really giving it some visual space. So if they're scanning, it's much easier to grab the important things So if the first thing I'm saying is not interesting, they can scan quickly and see the next thing and the next thing. Don't put it in a giant paragraph, because then all your thoughts, it's like they're going to start that first sentence and then
get tired.
Get tired and might skip to something else or just delete it in general. So that is something that makes it easier and more digestible when someone opens up an unsolicited email.
Yeah, spacing as well, as don't be afraid to bold the most important parts of each thought or paragraph, you know, bullet points, however it makes it breathable but also to the point and easily digestible.
And don't make it crazy. Use all this crazy formatting and like giant copy. And then, like, I've seen people try to format emails like a website. It just makes a mess. Just text is fine. Just you don't text. Well, you've got some bonus points here, which I think goes into, we're starting to head into. So why don't you hit some?
Oh, yeah.
Some of
okay.
Those.
So these are all, I think, pretty quick, but don't send attachments. If you've got audio or a video or photos you need to link people to, good. Leave the link, because attachments make me think that you're spamming me and you want to do me harm. So,
yeah.
Don't send those. Again, you can have a press release or an EPK or something ready and written, but that's not what the pitch is. The pitch is about uniquely tailoring the message to this person, so it should feel more personal and specific and not just be, again, a cut-and-paste job. But feel free to link to your EPK or your website or your press release if it's relevant. Let's see. Oh, there's a question, whether you should be pitching as yourself or have a friend slash manager slash whatever slash alias that actually is you but looks like it's you know, and that's more of just a question. I don't think there's a right answer. I've seen it work bad and good in all of those ways, but
yeah.
You know, a friend of mine has great luck booking himself 150 to 200 days a year. He's doing it himself but under an alias, so he has a booking agent that's him.
Interesting.
And no one ever seems to ask or care. Guess he does it really well, but...
You know, that made me think of something that's going back to collaboration, that if you have a friend that's booking himself really well and he likes your music, maybe ask him if he could get you into that gig.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Because it might be like, hey, our friend's band, they're getting gigs all the time. Well, maybe ask them to just give you a little shout-out. Say, hey, our friend's band, we think you should check out. And that might be a good way, you know, have a pitch that they could just, you know, put their name on and send along.
It's like the reference in a job interview. It's if you can have that introduction by a friend that's already in that realm, it suddenly comes with all this extra trust and what's the word?
Social proof.
Social proof, right. There you go. Legitimacy. What else? Oh, yeah. I have a Hotmail address. from 1,000 years ago. I also have 3 Gmail addresses, and I have a Gmail address that's actually like Chris at chrisrobley.com. You know, it's like my website affiliated address. So I would be careful about making pitches from my Hotmail account. It's like friends and, you know, things I'm subscribed to that I care about for that, because it's ancient. And I think, Gmail has more respectability than something like... Outlook
Yahoo.
And Yahoo and web crawler or whatever. But if you can, have it from a, what do you call that? A sort of official website email address.
From your own domain.
Your own domain. Then obviously that looks the most professional. So I would recommend that if possible.
I've thought of 2 things that aren't on the bonus.
Oh, okay.
But they should be. 1, prepare for rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And don't take it personally. And don't take it as a sign of a closed door. And that's why it's important that you do the pitching process right for all these opportunities, because it might be that it just isn't the right time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I pitched a playlist that I thought our music would fit. I listened to it, and it was something like, I forget what it was called, it had party music in it. And so I picked a song that I thought, I listened to this list and I'm like, okay, I feel like with the title, he might be going in thinking this direction. The music, he actually on his list, our music would fit. So I pitched him and he's like, this isn't the right, you know, opportunity or song for my list, but feel free to send me stuff in the future. And so it's like, I got rejected, but I did it in a respectful, in the proper method, in my opinion, that the door's still open, as opposed to being like someone that is like, dang, man, stop sending me this crap that doesn't match.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is part of that rejection is that they won't respond. And I had somebody email inbox shame me from their unsolicited pitch, and nothing made me angrier.
It was like, you had not responded to the pitch, and then they were like, what the hell?
They're like,
so
yeah,
rude.
Most people these days that are doing a good job answer all their email within one day. Like, so-and-so, and I'm like, oh, you should have seen me.
Wow.
I nearly screamed some obscenities. Like, I could not hit delete fast enough, and nothing makes me. I'm like, I did not ask for your email. You know, so don't act like you get to decide what I get to do at my job every day.
Your day and your time. I bet I'm probably on record on this podcast long time ago sharing frustration about not hearing anything back and, you know, kind of being like, you know, a no is a better answer than nothing, kind of. But now I feel like the world has sped up and changed so much since we started this podcast that I'm fully on board with that. Like, no one, yeah. If I didn't ask to get your email, I don't owe you anything.
Yeah, yeah. The idea that I owed somebody a response, I mean, like, if I directed my day like that, I'd lose my job. Because
right.
That means I'm really not doing the work I'm supposed to be doing.
You're responding to everyone else and never getting into what you need. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so don't ever do that. There is a way that you can follow up respectfully. Like, a common thing that people do, which I'm on the fence about, but I'll say it, is that they'll say, hey, just kicking this back up to the top of your inbox to make sure you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do much for me, but I know that that's something that people do, and it's like, oh, yeah, the inbox can get really buried, and sometimes we miss things.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way. Or they'll just say, hey, just want to make sure you saw this. If I don't hear from you, I'm just going to assume it's no, and I won't bother you again. You know, those kind of things are respectful ways to be able to say, hey, you know, I just want to make sure you saw this. We're excited about working with you, or we really would love to think that, you know, your venue is the right one for us, or that our new album would be of interest to your readers. Just want to make sure you saw that.
Yeah, I like the, if they do the kicking it up to the top of your inbox again, I like the, and if I don't hear from you, like, it's all cool. I'll assume it's a no for now. Like, so
yeah.
They're letting you off the hook.
Yeah.
That feels good.
You're not leaving him with this, like, you're a terrible person because so-and-so tech guru says that if you don't answer all your emails in one day, you're an ass. And it's like, well, now you make me feel bad and delete, delete, delete.
Never happens. One thing I'm on the fence about but sometimes appreciate is the, like, in a job interview, if the person doesn't get the job and they follow up and they say, like, you know, thanks for the opportunity. Do you have any pointers that, you know, kind of like a growth opportunity? What could I do better next time?
Yeah.
In an interview, it's like a kind of, you've spent time with the person. It you know, it's a little bit of a deeper relationship. So it's almost like, oh, I feel like I owe it to this person now that they've asked to.
Mm-hmm.
If it's you didn't get the, you know, sorry, we can't book you on Tuesday, and you follow up with, like, what could I do better next time? Like, I don't know, that might be a good thing in some cases, and you might get some valuable information. It also might just be yet another chore you're giving to this person. So, maybe.
Well, I think it depends on what the situation is. You know, for a playlist, I don't think that's appropriate because it's like it doesn't fit their playlist. For a press opportunity, I think it's worth that follow-up if you feel comfortable with it on how the, you know, the back and forth may have gone at that point. Because there's a lot of variables with press. Some of it is like, oh, I was really psyched about covering your release, but then Beyonce dropped a, you know, unexpected right. album, and as much as I love your album, I have to cover Beyonce.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, and then your album will already be out, and it's no longer a new release, and so, you know, there could be situations like that that are worth following up to find out, like, okay, it was just a timing thing. They liked it, and they had 5 albums to choose from. They had 3 slots. I was in the mix, but just didn't make the cut because of the volume of stuff they had, you know?
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to say is that sometimes it's okay not to make a pitch right off the bat, but to even ask if you can make a pitch. Like, for instance, you know, maybe you want to work with a publicist and you look at their website and they've got a roster of 10 artists or something. Maybe the first question is like, hey, like, you know, this, here's who I am. Are you on the lookout for new clients? Or like, I know, you know, we've talked about kind of hunting down the contact information of people who are independent playlist curators. Maybe it's like, hey, I like your playlist. Are you, do you accept submissions or
yeah.
how you would, however you would phrase it, rather than kind of launching right into the, here's what I have to offer. Sometimes I think it's smarter to just simply just inquire whether they even want to hear from people.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that makes me think of two other things. That one, in the do your homework piece, we said do your homework. Some of these people might have information online about how to reach them, whether it's a venue. They may have specific instructions.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Part of them, you know, filtering out bands is whether or not they can follow instructions that
yeah.
are clearly there for them on the web to make their job easier.
Because if you can't do that, whatever you're going to put in your rider or are they
yeah.
going to show up to soundcheck on time, all that's a very stressful question.
Yeah, yeah. So one, making sure that there isn't a very publicly stated preference for these things, and you might have to dig a little, but you know, there's a lot of these playlist brands that have emerged, like people have created playlist brands that if you Google them online, you'll find a website, and oftentimes there is pitching instructions.
Right.
Lots of venues have some, a lot of them don't, but it's at least worth looking. And even, you know, local press will have some instructions. I found instructions about pitching. You know, news stories. It's like, if you're going to pitch a news story, enter here. And we need, you know, because like with press, sometimes a photo is a requirement
mm-hmm.
and they'll give you instructions on the photo they're going to need. So if you just already have that and follow the instructions, you're ahead of the game. Also, some of these opportunities that you might be pitching yourself for, we didn't mention this in the list, but this is a really good one, is sync placements. And sync placements, oftentimes the conversation starts with, what music are you looking for right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because music supervisors, their job is very different and it can fluctuate. They could be working on a project that needs a lot of indie pop vocal, female vocal music. So even if they love your band that sounds like the Foo Fighters, they can't use it
mm-hmm.
because what the project that they're on really dictates a lot of times what music they're interested in being pitched.
Right.
So then, you know, but checking in with them from time to time because the next project they're on may need rock bands that sound like the Foo Fighters
right.
and then they want it,
mm-hmm.
you know. So just sometimes asking the question ahead of time, what are you looking for, can ease a lot of the back and forth. And then, you know, in some of those situations, you're showing here, I'm trying to be useful to you. I know you're busy, but I just want to know what you're looking for so I don't even have to bother you by sending stuff.
Right. Yeah. Good talk.
Yeah.
I feel like we covered the pitch.
The pitch.
The pitch.
The pitch. If you've got tips or tricks or things that you've done in pitching your music, or if you have horror stories.
Horror
stories go straight to the front of the line. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com.
I would love to read some of, like, if you've been, if you sent a pitch years ago that you're terribly embarrassed by, dig it out of your inbox and share it with us.
Yes. Also, don't just assume that because you've hired a publicist, like they know how to pitch for all these different types of opportunities.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a typical publicist is going to treat it with like a press release
mm-hmm.
and go about it probably in a traditional sense. They're probably not tailoring it for each individual opportunity. They're probably doing some more carpet bombing type techniques, unless you're paying them a whole lot more to really craft individualized pitches for very targeted media. So just don't assume that they know what they're
That's
doing.
That's good that you said that, because the pitches I receive that frustrate me for the DIY Musician blog, or if I get it for the podcast, then they tend to be from either a manager or a publicist. And when I'm like, you don't even know what we do.
Yeah.
Like, So it's a good point. It's not even really on the artists. It's just on their representatives.
Well, and a lot of times these representatives are people that have been, you know, if it's a publicist that it's like, yeah, I need cash. All right, I'll do this thing for this band for $500. The band may think that they're being pitched to all these places, and really the publicist just for $500 spammed their contact list, right. You know. So you got to understand what the individualized needs are and make sure that that's, if you are outsourcing it to somebody, make sure that that is what is actually happening, because oftentimes you have to train the professionals you hire what the actual opportunity is and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
I think we covered it.
Yeah.
I feel confident in our discussion.
Yes, that was thorough.
All right. Well, we have emails today. We're going to get to some emails. And I'm just going to dive in right here. You ready, Chris?
Ready.
All right. Hey, guys. I'm a Canadian gospel singer-songwriter under my own name, Mark Amadeus Flowerdew. Interesting last name. I've just recently been digging into your very helpful podcast, as well as other articles and courses about managing my music career well. Here's what that feels like. I have a steadily growing list of things I need to do if I'm serious about being a professional musician, but I'm not gaining any extra time in my life to get it done. Like, if I spend any more time developing content for social media, etc., when will I have time to work on recording my new album? Already years in the making. I was hoping you might have some advice about managing my time as a self-managed artist and kind of a perfectionist. Or are there certain tasks that I shouldn't be spending any time on? Thanks, Mark. I think about this a lot.
Yeah, me too. But it sounds like his first problem might be finishing the music, which seems more important than everything else if there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned being a perfectionist. What's the saying? Perfection is the enemy of the good, or something like that.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, something like that. That is one of those things where, with musicians, I think can be a time suck, where you get to a point where you're just wasting time going back and forth on things that the audience won't know, care, or, you know, just, I don't know, can be a symptom of maybe other things, like, I'm just scared to get this out there and see what really happens, mm-hmm. You know? I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but so with time, I'm one of those people that I have a hard time relaxing as it is in general. Like, if I'm if it's a Saturday afternoon and I've spent 4 hours just doing nothing, watching Netflix, I feel super guilty and just, I might still do it, but I have this thing like, man, I wasted 4 hours. I could have been working on music. I could have been doing something or being productive. I come by it honestly from my mother. But anyway, that's how I'm wired to begin with. So I think about it a lot, but what I do is like, I've been trying to be a lot more intentional lately with my time of like, okay, I'm just wasting time on my phone here. So I try to like figure out, am I wasting time or am I being productive? And being productive could include like, hey, you need some rest. You know, this is time where it's okay to not be going nonstop. But really trying to cut things out that are just a waste of time. You know, I think a lot of what we do under the idea of social media marketing is actually just wasting time, you know. And that's why, you know, in that keynote I've given, I say, marketing your music is not wasting time on Twitter, you know, or shouting at people on Twitter, or wasting time on Facebook. And a lot of times these things that we think we're doing that are necessities are really just time wasters, mm-hmm. and making sure that what we're doing is actually has purpose and some goals maybe attached to it.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot about story on this podcast. And if what you're doing on social media is an extension of your story, it's a deliberate way of furthering the story you're trying to tell, then I think that's worth doing. But if it's getting into that realm where you're like, just feel like you need to do it, or it feels, you know, disassociated from from some message that you feel like you've predetermined, then it's a waste of time.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a challenge. I have two daughters. They're 13 and 10. Or, yeah, one's about to turn 10 in a couple weeks as of recording this podcast. And so, you know, and I've got a full-time job that requires a lot, being a VP of marketing, mm-hmm. and then trying to keep music stuff moving forward with Small Town Poets and just my own personal growth and enjoyment and creativity that is stuff outside of what I do for Small Town Poets. And then making sure my house doesn't fall apart. it's a challenge.
It's serious adulting.
So, yeah, you got to be intentional with your time and look at it and go, at the end of the week or the month or the year, what are the things that I'm actually doing right now that are wasting my time that I really don't care about that mm-hmm. I'm going to be like, man, what did I do with all that time? And you have to make choices. It's tough. Whenever we're really in the midst of like tracking and recording, I always joke saying, I'm a musician. My yard's going to look like a mess when I'm in the
yeah,
middle.
Right.
I just don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Or hire somebody to do some of those things. But
yep.
it's tough. And, you know, it's just a matter of always assessing what has value and what doesn't. And at that moment, you know, like with Small Town Poets, there'll be phases where, you know, a lot of the marketing stuff just doesn't happen because it's not the important thing at that moment.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know if that helps, but it's one of those things.
It helps me because you described my life minus I only have one daughter instead of two, but the rest of it, job, music, wife, health, you know, being a dad, what else? Netflix, trying to get to the gym. It's like you got to cut some crap out.
Yep.
And the crap can't be any of those things. All those things I just mentioned are pretty essential.
No.
Maybe except Netflix.
But, you know, I think some of the things that outside of that, like, I think taking care of yourself is a part of that because if you're unhealthy by bad habits of eating, drinking, whatever you're, that really, at least for me, weighs down my creative energy or ability to feel like motivated. So mm-hmm. that could also be a source of the problem.
This is a real divergent at this point, but I sometimes will take 2 or 3 days off in a row, you know, maybe a couple times a year to do some recording. And I always think that that's my dream life, like before I do it. I'm like, oh, if only I just lived in a cave by myself with no distractions and a, you know, and my instruments and record. That's like, that's paradise. But what happens is the first day is me getting back into the rhythm, troubleshooting some tech issues, putting some ideas down. The second day is great because I'm making progress and finding solutions. And then by the third day, I feel like a disgusting troll. Like my and it's a mental thing. It's like my entire mind has been obsessed with one thing that I just feel foggy about every other aspect of my life. And then suddenly it's like responsibilities feel like an intrusion. And then I have to shake that. And it's like, that is gross. And so every time I do that, I'm like, I tell my wife, like, don't let me ever go past a third day doing this. Like, and probably I should only ever do it in 2 day increments.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's like this thing that I think I long for is actually really unhealthy if I were to do that.
Yeah. Turn into Brian Wilson.
Right. Yeah. It's not good.
The last thing I'll say on it that when you were talking just then made me think of is that I think one thing that's helpful to understand is do a real good self-assessment about when your peak times for doing different tasks are. Because, you know, like what you're saying, I'll have like a Saturday, a whole Saturday where like I've got all day to just sit and record and work on music. And if I go down into my studio at 2 o'clock, I might as well not do it. Because like in the afternoon, it's like my worst time for being productive in that way. Late at night, super productive. Finding that in the mornings, like around 10 a.m., I'm more productive. And like really just trying to schedule your day around, you know, I'd rather have an hour here or there where I know I'm productive and focused as opposed to wasting 5 hours at a time when I'm just not going to get things done. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, I have found that sometimes my best creative output happens when I can't be
creative,
or I don't have my guitar with me, or like I'll have all these ideas and like song melodies in my head. And like years ago now, when I was working at Starbucks and wanted to be anywhere but Starbucks, I wrote so many songs in my head while I was stuck making lattes for people that if I was home all day, would not have happened.
Yeah.
And so it's like understanding that sometimes your limitations can be a way to like your brain's like, dang it, I must be creative because I can't stand what I'm doing right now. So things to think about. All right, let's move on. Hey, Kevin, the latest podcast where you predicted various artist names for the same person would be aggregated eventually triggered this question. Spotify announced its beta songwriter pages. How can I use CD Baby's dashboard for designating a songwriter name, i.e. for a just-starting artist like myself? The only input I recall is full name, so Spotify credits list my full middle last name as songwriter. I'd rather do a different variation of my real name. And, he's in parentheses, it says, I know, right? No one else would notice or care. I could also ask CD Baby support, but I wondered if other listeners would be interested in the answer, too. Thanks. Oh, on another note, while I'm here, my music just got on Pandora Radio, and I was surprised at the artist tools they offer. I know you did an AMP episode a while ago, but would be interested sometime in an update on those tools. And that was from Rebecca. And let's start with the Spotify thing. Your songwriter name, we absolutely do require you to give us that when you sign up. And it is not, this is not something like an artist name. You can't get funny with it. This is, when you start talking about songwriter stuff, this has to be consistent everywhere so you get paid. So this is not an opportunity for you to get creative.
Totally.
But you can give input about where things are at with the beta thing for Spotify.
So Spotify is now grouping content according to songwriter credits. And one aspect of that, again, it's in beta, so right now very few artists have this. But there'll be a URL, a landing page for a songwriter with their top tracks that they've written for any artist. You know, so it's a grouping of, could be a grouping of songs by a bunch of different artists that were written by a single songwriter. You can get to that page if you're in Spotify, you know, the little ellipsis, you can click that, scroll down to the song credits, and then when you see the songwriter name, if they have a little arrow next to it, you'd click that and it takes you to this landing page. There's also for those songwriters an affiliated playlist called, what is it called? Written By. So again, that's like on the app, a grouping of the songs this person has written. But in my case, I'm pretty sure I put Christopher Robley for all the songs I write because that's how I registered with ASCAP long ago, and I tried to keep it consistent. And when she said, yeah, no one will care, like, I think that's true. No one's going to care. Like, if my songs are all grouped under a Christopher Robley page, but my artist name is Chris Robley, who cares?
Yeah, and the thing that's important to know is that this is not, like, an artist name... you know, that's sort of like the public branding of whatever you're doing, and that's how things are getting grouped on platforms. You know, like you said, like Chris Robley and the Fear of Heights, they're two separate things, but that still doesn't impact you getting paid.
Right.
Where your songwriter name has to be consistent with the songs you've written. Otherwise, it won't match what the PRO has. It won't match what any publishing admin service like CD Baby Pro has. Those have to be consistent. And that's more important than, you know, I'd rather it say this or that, because the way people are going to find this stuff is through the artist experience. There's only a handful of songwriters that are so big that people know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I bet hardly anyone listening to this podcast could listen to somebody, could list 10 songwriters that aren't also artists, because you're going to find Chris Robley's original music from the Chris Robley artist profile.
Right.
The thing where it's interesting is to connect collaborations, like what you've done with Date Night would show up
Totally.
in that area as well. So if it's something where you're collaborating with a lot of people, and something that I think artists are going to do more in the future, start collaborating with more artists, that's a connecting point. But it's not a, oh, this is a separate artist profile for me. I wouldn't think of it that way.
Well, two things. I wrote an article about this on the DIY Musician blog, and the first thing you should know is you can apply for one of these pages. There's a link in that article. It's a super, super quick application. They think they ask two questions. I have not heard back since I applied, so, you know, we should all expect to wait a long time, and then they'll just hopefully make it available to every songwriter. But the example artist I used when I was showing how these things appear on Spotify, forget her last name, Emily Weisberger or something like that. It's interesting with her because her own artist profile has like 31,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. But then if you go to her songwriter page, she's written tracks that have, you know, I think like hundreds of millions of streams each. Like she writes huge songs. In that case, it's interesting because I think if you're a fan of this, like, you know, modern pop that is like everywhere, it's kind of cool to be like, oh, what is this songwriter's artist life like? What's their music life? What is their music like when they are making it themselves? And so I think the exciting thing is for those types of artists drawing attention back to them as artists.
And I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
I think the tendency is for independent artists who write and record most of their music to get the that aren't that scenario to start looking at this as another thing around to dink around with the metadata, and that's not what this is.
Right, right.
This is not a, hey, I'm going to go customize this, because that's not the point of the songwriter name, is to make sure you get proper attribution.
Yeah.
Start with that. That's an important thing. Whether or not you have a songwriter page on Spotify, less important, you know. But and it'll be interesting to see how they roll this out. It's beta. They may not roll it out to everybody. They've tried a lot of things recently that they've taken away.
That's
so,
true, yeah.
So who knows? But I know it's something that's nice to see, that they're trying to figure out better attribution and connecting the dots between all the people that are contributing to the work of that you're listening to. All right, let's see. We've got a couple more emails. Should I go to the person that was very upset with us?
Yeah, let's do that first.
Okay.
And then we can end on a positive note.
All right. Here we go. Hi, Kevin and Chris. Have enjoyed your DIY podcast and CD Baby for years. This last episode, are you TikTok? Kind of worst episode ever. I get it. TikTok is mega sick. Old Town Road, explosive, y'all. For the love of all your artists listening to the podcast, why are you promoting a platform without any mention of IP rights? Any PROs giving thumbs up? Monetization story? Potential liability for your content being used in negative content? Also disappointing, the best case scenarios were hinted. There was no concern for worst case outcomes. I will be sharing my concerns to fellow artists. Super sad you all didn't homework. Signed, CD Baby Loyalist, now Fence Sitter. Okay, first off, if you are too, should I say coward? Too much of a coward to sign your own name. You're going to get out. You're going to pull out snarky Kevin.
Oh, okay, here we go.
Also, really, you've been loving CD Baby for years, and we post an episode of a podcast about TikTok, a platform that's not even us, and you don't like what we said, and you go from being a loyalist to a fence sitter. Isn't that the exact opposite of loyalty? Does the word loyalty mean anything? That means you're there with us through the thick and thin.
Well, they must have. They imagine they're using their critical faculties and.
Man, I was all into CD Baby. But damn, they posted this episode on a podcast about TikTok that didn't cover everything I wanted, and now I'm out. Well, let's address some of those IP rights. I'm not exactly sure what they're referencing there. When you use any of these platforms in their terms of service, there is basically lays out what you're signing up for.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, it's basically saying they own your content. So I know there was much discussion about Facebook's terms of service years ago, but each of them are going to be different. I don't think that's what our podcast tends to focus in on. We were talking about a new opportunity, and a lot of it was TikTok 101 for people who hadn't ever even downloaded the app.
Right.
Any PROs giving a thumbs up? I really don't care what ASCAP thinks about TikTok. They're gonna if a performance royalty is being generated, they're on it. I know that we, if you have CD Baby Pro, we are collecting publishing royalties for you off of the platform as well. And as far as monetization, yeah, we probably should have highlighted. I can't remember what we said, but it works similar to YouTube monetization. There's ads. It's ad supported platform. And monetization is paid out that way. Potential liability for your content being used in negative content. That's the internet.
It's the same everywhere.
Yeah. So I don't know why that was such a big deal. I mean, that's an obvious thing that you put your music out there. Someone can use your song in a way you don't want them to.
Yeah. I mean, I know you just said that's the entire internet, but it's real. They could be using your music on Instagram stories in a way you don't like.
And YouTube, you may not even ever know.
Right.
And chances are this is never going to be a problem for most artists, because unless you are that one song that people grab onto and it becomes a meme, basically, like where people are creating videos. Like if you go on TikTok, you'll see a lot of like dance videos or things where people are doing something too, that everyone's doing the same thing mm-hmm. over and over again. Unless you're one of those, I don't really see how that applies specifically to TikTok than just the internet in general. Yeah. We used to get that question about YouTube. We used to, you know, again, Instagram stories, you wouldn't even see what people are posting if they don't tag you.
Well, so I believe that if I found out someone was using my music in a way that I found offensive or whatever, I'm sure I would be pissed. I'm sure I'd be, I don't know, I'd be annoyed. I'd be concerned. But up until that point, I literally lose no sleep. I have never, ever lost any moment of sleep worrying about that, because I'm not there. Like, and even if I was, like, Beyonce has better things to worry about than that, too. Yeah. Like, she's got to plan her second Super Bowl. It's like, I just don't get why worry about that. Like, this is about, you know, we use the word exposure, and everyone's like, you know, you can trip off that thing where artists are like, oh, we don't need more exposure. We need whatever. But no, you need exposure.
Yeah.
No one knows or cares about your music. What you actually need is exposure. Like, get your friggin' music out there.
Yeah. When I read this email, it reminded me of when I used to do sync licensing for CD Baby, and I'd reach out to an artist, and I was shocked at how many times artists would, because it was basically a pre-cleared deal, meaning that I would be pitching, you know, to like TV shows and things like that. And if NBC said, yes, we want to use this song, I'd be like, done. It wouldn't be like, okay, hold on a second, let me go call the artist. Because a lot of times for independent artists in this world of sync licensing is that it's pre-cleared and they can move quickly. And so I was shocked at how many artists were like, well, you're not going to put it in porn, are you? I'm like, what? What? I've never even been concerned or think that, yeah, they're...
Weird.
Yeah, it's just...
You're like, well, I wasn't, but now that you mention it...
That's a big opportunity. But it's just like, it was just weird that people making that leap, like, no, I'm trying to put it in legitimate places. Where is this big market of porn music that, I don't know. Anyway, that's my response.
All right.
So
hopefully now the
fence sitter may have fallen off the fence on the other side.
Right.
And the email address it came from did not have a person's name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Truly anonymous.
All right, we've got one more email. Let's get to it quickly. Hello, Kevin. I hope you guys are doing well. I just have a quick question for you both today. In an earlier episode of the podcast, you guys talked about going very deep with metadata collection for song releases. I believe some of the examples you used were the type of guitar and pedals being used. Good information to have. I'm going to be recording my new track on the 15th and was wondering, what notes should I keep in the process? For context, the beat was made with the guitar and pedals. And I'm just kind of, there's, and a drum set. I'd like to take all this down as we create the song so we can drop the data later. It is also my understanding that CD Baby has filled all this information in the uploading process and will tag files before distribution. Is that correct? Thank you guys for all you do. Looking forward to seeing you in Austin this fall. Best, and the artist named Sin. I met him in Austin last year. He's emailed in before. So to answer this question, some of that stuff that I say to collect, like guitars, the kind of pedals you're using, and Doug, is really more for social media usage and for storytelling. I think in Instagram, a big opportunity, and I believe we talked about it in the previous episode, is, you know, tagging manufacturers and, you know, guitar brands and things like that, because oftentimes they're interested in what artists are using their gear and might retweet or repost your stuff or take an interest in it. So part of it's to document that. The metadata we need is more like the songwriters, you know, the titles, the descriptions, stuff like that, that relates more to the music. But some of the stuff that's not being collected now that's worth keeping is like where it was recorded and all that, you know, all the just like who engineered, who actually wrote, mm-hmm. you know, and things like that, that sometimes you may not need at the moment, but, you know, as credits expand online again, you'll want to drop that stuff in.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we do, we ask for a style description and album or single notes in our sign-up process, so some of that is more for internal use than it would be stuff we're currently sending to Spotify, for instance. But I'd say go long-winded, and if, you know, if you've got an accordion on your song, mention that in those notes, because it can be information we use for our sync licensing team to identify tracks.
Yeah, because you never know what, you know, you could have a sync opportunity where they're like, yeah, we're looking for a rock band that features a trombone. Or so, you never know what angle someone might come from. Or a playlist, songs that feature accordion. You know, there's all these different things. It's like being able to have that information at the ready is just good. You know, you don't need to go overboard in documenting so much so that the notes become useless.
Yeah, I don't think it's like if you've got a drum set, you don't have to be like a Ludwig drum set with a 24-inch bass drum, or, you know, but maybe you document that for your own usage so that down the road you make a Ludwig drums playlist. I don't know, but yeah, that level of detail we probably don't need.
Yeah, I was, the first album we did, Small Town Poets, I was documenting everything like that, mainly for my own benefit, so when I was listening later, I could remember what I did
to get that
sound.
You take pictures now of your effects settings?
Yeah, I do that now. So, yeah, so I hope that helps. All right, yeah, if you've got feedback, questions, comments, you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And you can include your name or not.
And if you don't, you might get snarky, Kevin.
Yeah, that's right. All right. And yeah, well, I think that's going to do it.
All right.
Let's go pitch some music.
Okay. Send us better pitches.
All right. That's going to do it. We'll catch you next time.
Yeah.
That's it.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.